This is Stonewall Live. My name is Nate. This is Stonewall Live. My name is Nate Klarfeld, and for the next half hour, we're going to bring you the best of gay and lesbian book, film, and media talk on Blog Talk Radio. Hey, good evening. This is Nate Klarfeld, as you just heard, and I'm going to be speaking with E. Robert Dunn, an author who has written a series of books on gay science fiction, as well as several screenplays, some teleplays, some off-Broadway plays, and I don't even know what else. But we're going to be speaking in a few minutes. That's Eston laughing. I'm going to be calling him Eston. That's his stage name. He'll explain why he's E. Robert Dunn and Eston Dunn. But one quick word. I've known Eston now for 10 years. We started with an organization called Arts United, which is an organization that he founded about 11 and a half years ago that expresses the gay and lesbian story in written, spoken word, art, and music. We've also together done a writer's workshop at the Stonewall Library and Archives. They've changed the name. It's the Stonewall Library Museum Archive, of which I was board chair for several years. And I'd like to introduce you to E. Robert Dunn. Take it away.
Well, hi there, Nate. Thank you for having me on the show. I'm really honored.
You're welcome. First question is, this is the one a lot of gay people have in their minds. How and when did you start your writing career?
Well, I started it like most people start anything with writing. I started in an English class, and I was very fortunate to have an English teacher who had also gone to Juilliard. And I was in this little podunk town in Pennsylvania, and miserable. And he was originally from there, too, and he saw the same misery in my eyes, and I guess he took me under his protective wing. And he basically said, if I don't get you out of here, you're not going to make it out alive, so let me make a few phone calls. And he did that because he was impressed with my writing, my essays and things like that. So he put me in contact with a friend of his who knew somebody in New York who was a literary agent. But I was about 14 or 15 at that time. I was in, 9th, 10th grade. How old are you then?
You had an agent at 14?
Yeah. But it's only because of this connection. And the way that it was done somewhat covertly. My instructor, whose name was Dr. Robert Myers, who, God rest his soul, just gave him some of my writing samples to this man named Dennis. And didn't tell him my age, and just said that, we'd like, if you could you read these samples? What do you think? Would you like to represent him? We think he's great. So that's what, I call him Bob. That's what Bob did. So Bob sent those off to Dennis. Dennis read through it and said, yeah, he's got some potential. Sure, I'd like to represent him. And it was after after a few negotiating things that eventually my age was revealed. And I tried to become a member of the Writers Guild at 14, way back in the 1970s. There's age discrimination. It just didn't happen. So my age was kind of kept hush-hush for a long while. And one of the reasons why my name became E. Robert Dunn, because my full name is Eston Robert Dunn, was to make me sound older, like L. Ron Hubbard. Another reason was I was already established childhood actor under Eston Dunn. And back in the day, you didn't do multiple things. You did one thing or the other. So if you were an actor, you weren't respected as a writer. If you were a writer, you weren't respected as an actor and vice versa, and also director, all that stuff. So I had to make a decision what I wanted to do, and I wanted to do both. So we came up with the idea that I would still continue to act under Eston Dunn, and I would continue to write as E. Robert Dunn, and they would be, somewhat two separate people. Today, that's totally different. In fact, versatility in the arts is, encouraged and is an accepted, way to be. But back in the day, back in the 70s, it wasn't. So that's how E. Robert Dunn was born and how Eston Dunn continued to live as a different person. So it's kind of odd now, in 2011, that when I do an interview, it's like, okay, who am I? If it's about writing, I'm E. Robert Dunn. If it's about acting and other things, it's Eston Dunn. Although I have done some writing under Eston Dunn, but that's mostly my fitness and health and wellness writing, because I have one of my degrees is in exercise science and preventive medicine. So I've done some professional writing under Esten Dunn, just because my degree has that name on it. So I just
what do you answer to?
Other than Precious, I answer to Esten. Yeah, E. Robert. If someone calls me E. Robert, then I know they're a fan, and so very few people call me that. So,
not even at a Trekkie convention or something?
Well, that happens sometimes. I have had people come up to the table and said, oh, E. Robert, you know, or E. or Mr. Robert.
Right.
You know, I've had a lot of fun, you know, funny interests.
Right.
That, you know, I saw that you were a contributing writer to, you know, this Star Trek online series, and I really liked, the webisode, and, then they want to talk about it. But for the most part, it's...
You know, just mentioned Star Trek. Could you tell us a little bit about the Echelon's End series, the genre? And it is probably one of the most unique things I've ever seen. I know that if you kind of Google the thing, you are actually going to see my name, Nate Klarfeld, on one of the reviews. And also on the back of the books, which is sitting upside down on my coffee table now for several years. I'm very impressed.
It should be.
Anyway, tell us a little about your genre, please.
Sure. Well, it kind of goes back to how I started writing. Of course, whenever you have an agent or true agent sits down with you and says, where do you want to go? Where do you want to go and how can I get you there? So it becomes a team effort. So a true agent will do that with you. So that's what he did. He said, what do you want to do? If you could do anything you want, where do you want to take this writing? And it was kind of queer at the time. At that time, I was really into Westerns. I like John Wayne and the whole Michael Landon and Bonanza and all that stuff. Really was into that. But then this TV show came on called Space 1999 that had Barbara Bain and Mart Landell, Barry Morris, and eventually Catherine Schell. And I'm a huge fan of Mission Impossible. So I said I thought I would watch it. You know, I really wasn't I like science fiction per se. I mean, I like the first season of Lost in Space. I like, like Planet of the Giants and stuff like that. And Star Trek, I kind of liked it, but I was really not a big fan because every episode was about how Captain Kirk can get laid. And as a young boy, I never got that. I could relate more to Spock and Dr. McCoy and everybody else, but I never got into Captain Kirk. So it soured me to the genre, actually, because I couldn't relate to it. So I was into Westerns, guys hanging out with guys. I got that. So anyways, I started watching this show, and I really loved it because it really was pure science, and it really wasn't about, like, the Captain Kirk thing about sex, and it wasn't about any of that. It was things I could somewhat relate to as a 14-year-old boy. And I said to my agent, Dennis, I said, I would really like to, write for this show. And he said, okay, let me make a few phone calls and see how that can happen. So he made a few phone calls and got the people that he needed to talk to. And he said, okay, give me some storyline ideas. Because back then you could do storyline ideas, and then they had someone do a teleplay and then a screenplay. And it was a little different than it is today. So that's what I did. And so we were in negotiations for some of those scripts or story ideas for the third season of Space 1999, which never happened. So that's how I got kind of started in the sci-fi genre, was writing those story ideas for Space 1999. And then after that, it was the original Battlestar Galactica and then Buck Rogers in the 25th Century. And, as things go in Hollywood, they love you and then they change their mind. So a lot of the ideas that we were talking and negotiating and people liked didn't get picked up because the show was canceled or the way the show was supposed to go was changed. And so my storylines were no longer applicable. So I had all these story ideas. Go ahead.
I just want to remind people that there is a call-in number to talk to Esten and I or ask us questions or make any comments. It's 805-830-8355. 805-830-8355. I feel like I'm selling Tupperware.
If I hear a doorbell, I'm hanging up. I don't need cosmetics.
But there's more. But wait, there's more.
What more? But wait for it.
Anyway, here's another question I want you to go towards. Your series Echelon's End,
right.
Which came along later, and I wanted you to talk to you about the Manhattan Writing Project next.
Right.
After you speak about the Manhattan Writing Project, which is how you got your start, because I've already interviewed you and talked to you for like 11 years, I want you to go into how the same sex genre hit science fiction. But first, let me ask you about the Manhattan Writing Project.
Okay. Well, the Manhattan Writing Project, it was kind of weird. They all happened at the same time. So like I was saying a little bit before, I was writing all these story ideas for TV shows, and they never went anywhere. So I had all these scripts, and my agent turned to me and said, you know, you're bright enough. Why don't you create your own universe? You don't need to write for somebody else's ideas. Why don't you take these ideas, change the names, change the locations, and come up with your own universe? So that's what I did. And while I was doing that, I was, well, I kind of finished prep school, and I was going into university, and I was a model back then. I wanted to be an actor, but the agency I was with, which I won't name, had a model and talent division, and I was in that because I was an actor, but also I could model. Their dreams for me was to model, 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 model. My dream was, when am I going to go on auditions to act?
Right.
So while I was doing that, a bunch of us, of my friends, there were like 20 of us, but 14 of us were really, really close. We were a bunch of nobodies trying to be somebodies, and we were, you know, I was living in New York part of the time and then living in D.C. because I was going to go to the University of Maryland. So I was going back and forth, doing a modeling gig, and then I go back and forth. So a bunch of us just got together and said, you know, why don't we, if we can't get work because all the doors are closing in our face, let's create our own doors. And we called it the Manhattan Writing Project.
Mm-hmm.
And what it involved was director, young wannabe directors, wannabe actors, wannabe writers, wannabe everybody coming together and trying to create movies, plays, books,
right,
whatever. And we all said, whoever made it first, we take everybody with us. And that's how the Manhattan Writing Project got its start, at least how I got involved in it, was people knew people, and then, you know, we would have these meetings, and you could bring one or two guests along who you felt could help with a project. And so I got in through a series of friends who had gone to the performing arts school, you know, that the original movie Fame was based on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I had friends that were in, you know, in that movie, and they went to the school, and that's how they got me, and we all got involved in that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I got involved with the Manhattan Writing Project. And one of the things that I was working on were taking these storylines and developing them, into my own universe,
right,
in the genre of sci-fi. And that's how Echelon's End was born, was in that incubator. It wasn't originally same-sex oriented in the beginning because of the time. This is early 80s during the Reagan years and the AIDS epidemic. So it really wasn't quite fashionable to be writing about gay anything or be identified as gay anything. But through a series of different workshops, I wasn't doing some of the straight relationships correctly.
So?
The criticism I was getting was like, you know, the characters are wooden, your women are too manly, and all these things.
Yeah.
So eventually my friend, you know, my agent Dennis said, you know, not to drop an F-bomb, but Dennis was like that. He'd go, you know, fudge it, and just write about what you know. And I knew same-gendered relationships.
Right.
So I created two of the characters in that Echelon's End series that became two male lovers. And then I even extended it further that they come from a society where homosexuality is the norm and heterosexuality is the minority, because they've conquered most of the diseases, these characters and the civilization. They've created a utopia where people live to 200. So, you can only take up so much space, and there really isn't a need for children. All these children, there was no need for it. So in the course of evolution, you know, you hear about straight people always complaining about each other. If you didn't have the reproductive, you know, urge, would you really be together?
Right.
So over time, this culture has evolved where men are with men, women are with women for the most part, and then there's a minority that, yes, they do reproduce and they replenish the numbers of those that die, although the death rate is so low, per se. And then I just began to, you know, because I was, by that time I had decided to go into exercise science, and I got involved in anatomy and started to investigate psychology, and then I started developing a whole culture behind it to justify it, and then I created this whole thing called Catella, which is a second puberty in which these characters go through normal life like we do, but their sexuality doesn't mature until their 30s. So by that time, they have their degrees, they have everything established, they're not distracted by reproductive hormones or even, you know, sexual hormones. That doesn't kick in until later on in their lives, so they're academically driven. And there is no societal pressure to get married to make a baby. That's removed as well.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, if you have an Echelon, who is, in my way of saying, gay, in your family, you are honored. And then also, if you have a baby, you're honored because they're so rare. So in my society that I create, children are treasured and they're nurtured and they're cared for by the community because they are a rare occurrence. Not every family has children. Those that do, it's not like, you know, a litter. And, again, they're treasured. So they come from this utopia, and that's what I created with that. But it all has to end because there's no drama in paradise.
Right.
So I created conflict, which is a war between the echelon and an invading Saurian race that wants their utopia but doesn't have the mindset to create utopia because they're like we are today, which is reproductively driven. And they're so obsessed with reproduction, they don't know how to make peace because they're still dominated by clanship wars and spreading their genes and the whole thing that we are still caught up in, which is why a lot of people don't understand homosexuality because it doesn't produce children. And because they don't have that concept of unconditional love, they don't understand homosexuality on some level because you don't make a baby, so why would you have sex?
Right, and not only that, there's no tribe, there's no clan, there's no estate. You know, it's not like
And you know, I did create family units, but it's not the same drive. It's not those. There's no clanship wars. I mean, you are part of a clan, you are part of, but it's an extended family of the community, which is the society. And I also created. They have a heightened sense of themselves and everybody else. So they have what's called a united ka, which means that they have an affinity for each other. So if you would hurt another person, you feel the pain. So if you would kill somebody, you would feel the pain they felt if you killed them.
Okay.
So a lot of that, all that's gone. The murder's gone. All that's gone because if you hurt somebody else, you hurt yourself.
Yes. Okay.
So, you know, I kind of built all those mechanisms into this society. And unfortunately, I had to destroy it to create a conflict to create this, you know, storyline.
We had four books to write.
Well, actually, I have six, and then I'm thinking about a seventh. Yeah, but four are published out there somewhere in the ether, and then I have two manuscripts in the computer, and I'm finishing up the sixth one, and I might create a spinoff one just with the two gay characters.
Just our listeners know, if you go to the show page for E. Robert Dunn, and if you click on the book cover for Echelon's End, it will take you to Amazon.com where all four of the books are available.
And actually, books one and two have been put into a compilation ebook available on Kindle. So if anyone's into ebooks, I did that. I combined books one and two of the original manuscripts. You know what? You've written things, and then an editor gets a hold of them, and they do a nice little surgery on it. And that's what happened to me, and so I didn't agree with a lot of the changes that the editors had made, but I wanted to be published, so it was a compromise. But now that I have rights of everything, because the publisher was sold, and the new publisher doesn't do sci-fi, all those rights retained back to me. So that's what I did. I took the original manuscripts and put them together. So if anyone has the paper back already, they might want to get the Kindle version because it has the lost chapters, the lost paragraphs.
And as you know, the Stonewall Library Museum Archive, I said it right that time, has all of the original manuscripts, and this is for all authors and bloggers and writers out there. We do collect original manuscripts, original tapes, original discs, and we have now 40 tons of gay and lesbian history pertaining to print.
Some of that is mine.
And you have a box because you're prolific. So you have a whole box.
Yeah. Actually, I donated my original handwritten.
We have it.
The original storylines, and then I also donated the original first drafts of Echelon's End.
Right. If any of you come to Fort Lauderdale, it's 1300 East Sunrise Boulevard. It's one of my babies in life. I have a 34-year-old son that I've raised, and the game must be a library.
And his wife's so understanding.
Right. And a very understanding partner, Grover Lawless, my partner, to live through the fundraising, building, and aggravation of the library. But anyway, yes, we do have your stuff in the library. Okay, I'm going to ask you a couple of questions now.
Sure.
I have tons. You have to promote your own book. A lot of people out there think you write a book and you turn into a Rawlings from, or you know, Rawlings or Hillary Clinton, and then they
round
in buses to all the wonderful places, and you stay, and Oprah talks to you, and you're in Oprah's book club right away. What's it really like, Mr. Dunn?
Well, it's you, like any artist, you do the work for the art's sake, not for the monetary, you know, benefits, not for the fame, not for the notoriety. Hopefully, you have to have that mindset as an artist. Because unless you are Hillary Clinton, unless you are a celebrity that a publisher approaches and says, I'll give you $1 million advance if you write your book,
right?
Which is like 1% of 1% of 1% of our population.
Right.
So for the rest of us, yeah, the publishers just don't have, especially for books, books are becoming antiques. And we of this generation that likes to feel a book are really the market that you're targeting, because the younger generation is all electronic.
Right.
So paper books are, it's hard to sell them because bookstores are closing because people don't buy books. They buy flash drives with everything downloaded onto it, and they plug it into an iPad or whatever, and they, or they get it through a wireless connection. So, and that hasn't made it easier, but when I first started, it was the same way. They're like, who are you?
Right.
And again, in, even if I had anything published, anything, they were still like, who are you? And so yes, you do have to help, you have to promote yourself. Today it's a lot easier than in the day that I started, because now you do have the internet. You do have the advantage of Facebook and Twitter and all, and you can create your own celebrity.
Right.
And do that, which is kind of what we're doing now. But,
right.
But back in the day, it's literally you had to hoof it. You know,
right.
You had to go knock on doors, and you had to print your own stuff and work. And I was very fortunate because I was with Hayworth Press. I don't mind giving them a little plug because they're no longer Hayworth Press. Hayworth Press were wonderful. I mean, they printed postcards, and they printed posters, and they printed anything I needed. But I had to go knock on Borders door and say, hi, I'm E. Robert Dunn. I have this new science fiction. It's published by such and such, da-da-da-da. Could I have a book signing?
Right.
And most bookstores have community liaison personnel that's kind of their job, is to create book signings, or is to create things that tie in the community. And I was fortunate because I did have also Arts United up and running at that time. So it was a nonprofit. So it helped me, because I not only went in there as a writer, a published author, but I went there also as the founder of a nonprofit, and we created like an event where it wasn't just about me, it was about other local authors. So what I tried to do, and that's one of the reasons why I started Arts United, was to make somebody's out of nobody's and create doors when there are so many doors that slam in your face for very legitimate and talented people, one of those being writers.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing that we did. I went to Borders, and they were very generous at that time.
Remember
to help us with
that. For Pride?
Hmm?
We did it together for Pride.
Yeah, we did. It was like Out and Proud, or it was something, it was a really catchy. We did that for several years, actually.
Right.
Borders was very good. Rochelle, actually, she was the community liaison that I worked with for years, helped us every single, I think it was June.
Right.
We were put on the calendar a year ahead to make sure that we had our event, and we helped promote not only local authors, but up and coming with the workshop that you and I did, Nate, people that had written like a little excerpt, they were allowed to read. We called them the up and comings.
Right.
And they had an opportunity to read whatever they had written in the workshop.
And I just heard today that Borders is about to go into chapter 11 or chapter.
I know.
16.
Yeah. I know.
They've got
yeah.
like about 90 days to find a buyer or shut the doors. They've stopped shipping books to them already.
Yeah, and that's sad, because Borders was the only bookstore that would even look, give me the time of day.
Right.
I went to all the other major chains, and they snubbed me.
Really?
And I was published. I had a publisher.
I know.
And they still snubbed me because I didn't have a name. I found that very disconcerting. But you have to get used to the rejection. And, of course, being gay, I wasn't used to rejection, right? But it hurts when you're an author. You know, and you have your books are your baby, and they're rejecting not only you but also your work. And some of it was based because there were two gay characters in the storyline, and they focused on in some books, you know, it depends on what book you get, there are like, you know, six or seven main characters, and of all those, only two of them are gay. But that's all they focus on, because science fiction really hasn't stepped up to the plate in dealing with homosexuality, like all the other genres, like comedy and drama. Science fiction is getting there as we speak today, but we're dragging homosexuals into the future. And from my experience, if you want my opinion on why I think that is because in the future, if we acknowledge homosexuality, we have to acknowledge it in the present.
Right.
And our society still has a problem with acknowledging homosexuality as a legitimate life, not lifestyle. Lifestyle was buying a home by a golf course and golfing every day. That's a lifestyle. But being gay is a life. It's not a lifestyle. You don't choose it. You are chosen, like heterosexuality. It is who you are, and it's hard for people to wrap their brains around it, again, especially if they're heterosexual, because we don't produce children, and that's the only reason why to have sex. It's what every society has indoctrinated into their youth. I mean, I had not to say anything against my family, but it was just habit. I had my first offspring in our family was a niece. You know, I have a little niece, a little girl, and I swear she must have been 3 or 4, and she was in nursery school, and the family was already asking her if she had a boyfriend.
She's a
4-year-old girl.
Oh, no. But
everyone does it. Everyone does it. I mean, as a homosexual, I see it the world differently, and I see the indoctrination. It was done to me. I remember I was in preschool, and I was pressured to kiss girls. I was pressured, like, do you have a girlfriend? Who's your girlfriend? I'm like, I'm a little boy, and I'm already pressured. Are you going to marry her when you grow up? It's like, what? But you hear it in restaurants. You hear it on playgrounds. You hear it everywhere. And from a heterosexual point of view, they don't understand the harm in that because they assume all their children are straight.
And
as a gay child, I was confused because it's not really how I felt, but I thought it's what I had to do. Because everyone else was saying it, like my grandparents, my aunts, my uncles, even my older cousins. So, okay, I'll kiss her. Yeah, okay. And then they make a big deal. Ooh, he kissed her. They're going to get married when they grow up. It's like, what? So, that's part of it, too, whenever you just don't understand that you are looking at a child who could be same gender oriented.
Wow.
And that's okay, because we were all children at one time, and we had these thoughts when we were then. I'm a 60s child. So in the 60s, you didn't even know the vocabulary.
Right, exactly, right.
You didn't know you had a choice because there was no vocabulary for it.
And there was no, I mean, the role models were so negative.
Oh, God, yes, they were. I mean, nothing against, and God love those pioneers at Stonewall, those drag queens, who, God love them.
Right, or
but
Frank
that's not
Hammond.
Who, that's, yeah, I don't identify with that. That's not me.
Right, but I mean, the early ones in the 60s were so radical and so out there. So, and always, the hairdressers and the florists, and that was about it. You had two.
I'm not any of that either. Right, you're exactly right. I'll never forget, I was in 10th grade, and that was around the time that the homosexuality was lifted from the, Board of Psychiatric as a mental illness.
Right.
And, of course, Anita Bryant was on her orange truck doing her thing. And there was a documentary, I'll never forget, on ABC that tried to explain it and interviewed gay people, lesbians and everything. And it was an assignment in my psychology class that we had to watch this program and then write a paper on it. And thank God for that assignment because it was a double-edged sword, obviously, because I identified with like, oh my God, my people. But the gay men that they interviewed, for the most part, were very effeminate. I remember there was one that had a glass menagerie.
I know that too. Listen, we've got to wrap it up.
Okay.
We've got about a minute, and I want to thank you immensely. I want to talk about how people can find me, find our show. It's Stonewall Live, one word, blogspot, stonewalllive.blogspot.com. I Twitter at Stonewall Live, one word. Let's see, what else? I'm on Facebook as Stonewall Live, two words, and of course, blogtalkradio.com/Stonewall Live. And I want you to know that we've got some great guests upcoming, so if you'll just check the Facebook page or this page again, the next few weeks we'll be having some great guests. Esten, I want to thank, E. Roberts or Esten, I want to thank you. This was a blast. You tell your friends that this is archived for 5 years so they can find it. Yeah, 5 years. And also be permanently at the Stonewall Library and Archives in a permanent audio show. Good night, and thank you.